Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. It kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hey, Next on the Tee Nation, thank you so much for coming in for another bonus edition of the show featuring my conversation with two-time Super Bowl champion Trey Essex. Trey played the majority of his career in Pittsburgh with the Steelers, won the Super Bowl, like I say, two times, 2005, 2008. He finished up his career in Indianapolis with the Colts. And this is a very fun conversation for me, because it marries my two favorite things, the Pittsburgh Steelers and golf. We start out talking about his time in Pittsburgh, obviously, and listening to the things that he believes are going wrong currently with the Steelers. We get into the trenches on both sides, O-line, D-line. Where are they deficient? Where do they have opportunities? What's going on there? Get into Broderick Jones and Troy Fautanu at the tackle positions where Trey played. We also talk about some of the other things that he is seeing with respect to why they're not able to run the ball very effectively. And then we switch over to the other side and talk about why the other teams are having so much success running against the Steelers. How are their D linemen getting pushed out of the way? How are the B and C gaps being left wide open for guys to have huge runs against this defensive line? We also talk about the guys that coached him, Russ Grimm, Larry Zierlein, Sean Kugler. What were the differences? Are there a lot of differences in the blocking schemes and the philosophies amongst O-line coaches? And then we switch over to golf, and we get to hear some of his favorite experiences playing the game of golf. When did he take it up? What are some of the great courses that he's had an opportunity to tee it up at? And he's played some really good ones. Self-taught, by the way, his golf game. So we talk about that as well. And then we round it out with some of his favorite golf memories. So you guys are going to love Trey. If you're not already following him out on social media, at Trey Day 79, T-R-A-I Day 79 is where you're going to find him. Plus, he also does his own wonderful show alongside of former Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch. It's called The Snap Count. You'll hear a little bit about that as well. So, folks, thank you so much for pressing play on another wonderful bonus edition of Next on the Tee. Sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next half hour or so. Okay, but before we get things rolling, I want to give a shout-out to my friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find Next on the Tee on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I want to welcome a new member to the Next on the Tee family, Sunday Swagger. Tired of boring golf clothes? Sunday Swagger is changing the game with premium performance apparel that delivers the look and feel of $100 polos for much, much less. Never sacrificing on style or comfort, their bold polos, shorts, and outerwear feature four-way stretch and moisture-wicking fabric that moves with you, whether you're crushing drives or crushing happy hour. With over 300 unique designs and vibrant colors, ranging from bestsellers like Jawbreaker to exclusive collaborations with Guinness, Sunday Swagger offers something for everybody. And their matching prints for couples and families with children are flying off the shelves as their most popular styles. You might even recognize Sunday Swagger designs in popular Hollywood movies and TV shows, including Happy Gilmore 2. Sunday Swagger is guaranteed to turn heads and spark conversation. Visit SundaySwagger.com and join the Sunday Club for exclusive drops and member benefits. Sunday Swagger, it's your swagger. Embrace it. Own it. And folks, this year, get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at the Keep. It's the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you. But you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast. So don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themacklemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now next on the tee with me is former Steelers guard Trey Essex. Let me give you some background on Trey. He's from Fort Wayne, Indiana. He lettered in football and basketball in high school, and he helped Paul Harding High win the 2A Indiana High School State Championship. He played his college ball at Northwestern, where he started every game his freshman year at tight end, and he was named to the Big Ten All-Freshman team. He moved to tackle prior to his sophomore year. He was named to the All-Bowl team following his performance in the 2003 Motor City Bowl. He was a third-round pick by the Steelers in 2005, and he played in the league from 05 to 2012. All but his last season was in Pittsburgh. He finished up there with the Colts. He helped the Steelers to 3 Super Bowl appearances, including wins in 2005 and 2008. You can hear him now alongside Charlie Batch on their show, The Snap Count. Trey is a fantastic follow on Twitter at TreyDay79, and I am very excited. I get to spend some time with him today here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Trey, how are you, my friend?
Fantastic. Chris, this is one heck of an intro. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. So, Trey, a lot to get into, obviously, regarding the Steelers so far this season. I think I and the rest of Steelers Nation felt okay after they beat the Jets in week one. The defense wasn't concerned. Broderick Jones was a concern. But as they say, winning cures everything. And then Seattle comes to town for the home opener and continues the trend of running all over the defense. The middle of the field was wide open all the time for Sam Darnold and the wide receivers. Communication again was something that Mike Tomlin said was a problem with the defense. Trey, when does this coaching staff become accountable for having the same problems, it feels like, week after week and year after year?
I mean, they're accountable already. And I think this year is a bigger microscope on all things because, like you said, so many issues are repeating themselves. The same issues we've had for the last few years on the defensive side of the ball as far as stopping the run have started early this year. And that was even the case at the beginning of last year. The defense started out strong and then faded towards the end. And for it to start out this way is very concerning. With all the new pieces that we added on that side of the ball, with what Coach Tomlin proclaimed as a potentially historic level type defense, they have obviously shown far less than that. And the concerns don't look easily fixable. So, yes, the coaches are taking accountability. I know they're taking a hit in the media this week. They're going to need to see some major improvements this week versus the Patriots in order to flip that trend and get people on the good side.
Yeah, so let's flip it around to the other side of the ball, Trey, because the offense hasn't been able to be effective in the run game, it feels like, for years. Last year, they were 25th in average yards per carry. They're 30th so far this season, only averaging 3 yards per carry. Meanwhile, as we all know, they have 2 first-round picks at tackle, a second-round pick at center, a guard they signed away from the Eagles, and a 4th-round pick at the other guard position. How much of their inability to run or pass block very well is due to how little time, I guess, if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, that these guys have had to work together? Because this is year 2 for Frazier, McCormick, and Faltanu, year 3 for Broderick Jones, even though you could say Faltanu only played 1 game last year, so he's sort of a rookie. But Seumalo is a 10-year veteran. How much longer do you get to have the grace of saying we're young or that they haven't had much time to play together And at what point do they have to start taking accountability for the fact that this offense just can't seem to get going week to week?
You got to hold their feet to the fire now. They are a young group, so there is some expectation that it will take some time to coalesce and get that chemistry going in the right direction. So many new pieces on that side of the ball, so you don't want to be as hard as them as you are on the defense, because you do have a new quarterback that didn't play in the preseason, has to get used to this O-line. Tackles playing new spots. Troy only started one game last year on the right side, so this is essentially his rookie year on the right side. The problems with Broderick have been well documented throughout the years. His first time on the left side, still some of the same issues he had on the right side are still happening on the left side. It's his third year, so I don't want to hear the old adage that he hasn't played this position. If you're a first-round talent with first round and you got drafted in the first round, you should be able to switch sides without as many issues that he continues to have. And so when you see all this, you got to look at the O-line coach. You got to look at Pat Meyer and ask him, what is going on in that O-line room? It's his third year, and I will say that Zach Frazier and Mason McCormick did show some good ball last year. Those guys are young. Neither one was supposed to play as early as they did, but they did, and they have shown up. So got to give them grace. The guy that I want to see the most from, and this all points to your question about how we're going to run the ball effectively and how we're going to pass protect. We need to get more from Isaac. We signed him from Philly. He's a Super Bowl champion. And he's, like you said, he's been in the league for 10 years now. And it doesn't seem that we're getting the leadership that we should from him. He is the only vet on that line. And early this week, when me and Charlie Batch were talking to Alan Fanick, and one of the things that I mentioned that made us such a successful team in 2005, my rookie year, is because we had that vet O-line presence. We had Alan Fanick. We had Marvell Smith. We had Jeff Hardings. Granted, it's a different, we have a lot more vet presence, obviously, but those guys weren't afraid to talk. Those guys weren't afraid to let the young guys know this is the standard that we've set, and this is what you should follow and do. And so they don't have that in Pittsburgh right now. They don't have that on the O-line, and they don't know what it looks like because they don't have that example shining for them. And so in order for us to get the run game going, it starts with the O-line, and it's going to take some time. I think if these issues aren't corrected by the bye week, and we have an early bye week, week four is our bye week, then you start to look at maybe some other options, maybe another voice. It's hard to really fire an O-line coach in the middle of the year, so I don't think they'll do that, but at least get somebody in there that can get them moving in the right direction.
So let's take that a step further, Trey. A different voice. Guys that can lead by example, or at least show examples. One of the things, and I've talked to several former Steelers on this show, you know, the Greg Lloyds and the Chad Browns and Rocky Blyers and all of that sort of thing. When you look at who is around the team, whether it's in training camp, if OTAs, or even at this point in the season, like, why are guys like you, like Greg, like Chad Brown, like Rod Woodson, like Hines Ward, why aren't those guys around the team for, if nothing else, to be a guy that they know that has been in the trenches, that they know that have been here, that they can ask questions to, versus just having Pat Myers and his team? Why isn't there a different voice for guys that have been there and have been successful?
Well, personally speaking, I know that we've gone back a couple of times. Just this training camp, I was there. Max Starks is a constant presence there, so they're starting to bring him around. So I think maybe they are heeding some of the things that we're saying and being more involved. This year, I've seen more former Steelers in Pittsburgh camp than I've had in a long time. So I think maybe they're starting to see that there is some value in having the old heads that have had championship experience come back and talk. And coincidentally enough, it's the 20th anniversary since the Super Bowl XL in 2005. And so we'll all be back there eventually at the beginning of November for the Colts game. But I was there in camp. Willie Colon spent a good amount of time doing an internship there as well. And so there's been an effort, I think, in bringing back guys so that the guys there can see what it looks like, how we carry ourselves, what we are expecting when we see and go to practice. And I think that's beneficial. And so I do think they are taking heed, and they have heard the voices say that maybe we do need to bring some of those guys back to impart some good wisdom on these young guys.
That's good news. You talked about how you saw improvement from Broderick Jones from week one to week two, but you also remarked it. He's still catching too much, not violent with his hands enough. Talk about what you mean by that.
So as a tackle, especially as a left tackle, you're usually going against one of their best, if not the best athlete on their team. When you think about size, strength, and speed, the Miles Garrett's of the world, the who do we see last week? The kid from Seattle. I forgot his name, but usually you see your best athlete. And so in order to keep them at bay, being an athlete is good. Being big is good. Staying low is good. Having a great punch is even more beneficial for you if you're going to be a good tackle in this league. There is somebody on a team that shows that penchant for having violent hands, and that's Andres Pete. When he came in halfway through training camp and he got inserted into left guard, the first thing I noticed is that he throws hands. And that's, to me, it seems like, because I'm watching across the board, it's not just Broderick that's not doing it. Troy does it, but I think that's something he learned prior to coming here. But none of the guys up front are violent with their hands. And that's a coaching thing. And Broderick wasn't somebody that threw punches anyway. He had to be coached up coming out of college, dude. The staff knew this when they drafted him. He didn't have a whole lot of experience at Georgia. You drafted him on potential. And he has all the tools. His feet, his footwork is great. He wants to get into the mix, but you can tell that maybe he lost a little bit too much weight. And the one reason you don't throw hands is if you feel like you're not strong enough. Because what you want to do is use your size and your body to catch and absorb the blow versus leaving your hands out there vulnerable for a defensive lineman to knock them off and for you to get off balance. Or you don't just have enough faith in your punch. And so Broderick has shown that consistently, that even when he does try to punch, it's like this hug type punch where he's punching outside the framework of the defensive lineman versus punching straight through their chest. And that's how you let them know that you're here. You punch them straight in their chest, punch them straight in their numbers, give them a little jolt, and make them restart their rush. And that's how you become an effective tackle in this league.
So you said across the board, are you seeing issues with the O-line sort of overall technique? Like, is it footwork? Is it that punch, that hand position? Is it strength? Is it lack of being able to understand what the team is doing against them to be successful? Where do you see across the board where they're deficient?
It's communication. It is adjusting on the fly to looks that aren't straight up rushes. And so the issues that we're having the most of, and that we're going to get a lot of because we put it on film, Seattle exploited it big time, is twists and stunts by the D lineman. When you have a D tackle going outside and defensive end coming in, or a nose tackle or a D tackle, some kind of twist, some kind of stunt is giving our offensive linemen the most issues. And that's only because communication. Guys aren't talking up front. Guys aren't punching and pushing people out to their teammate. And guys aren't setting properly to take care of these twists and these stunts inside. And that's all communication. It's also just reps as well. These guys are going to need more reps. They haven't played that much together as a unit, especially with Isaac at left guard. He didn't play all the preseason and didn't practice much at all. So even one piece missing on the O-line or one piece not on the same page is going to mess up the whole thing. And so there is no easy fix, Chris, unfortunately. It's going to take time, and it's going to take an emphasis by the coach to get these guys in the lab communicating on how to pick up these stunts and be on the same page. Because honestly, when I see them working in concert together, when they're on the same page, they are an effective O-line. They have all the talent. They are strong and they are nasty, especially inside with Mason and Zach. And I love the way Troy's natural disposition is. He wants to hurt somebody. And so when you have those type of attitudes and you get them on the same page, good things are going to happen. It's just a matter of reps and getting communication clear across the board.
Trey, looking back at your career, Russ Grimm was your O-line coach for your first two seasons, followed by Larry Zierlein and Sean Kugler. How different were the blocking schemes and the blocking philosophies between those guys?
Oh, they were all different. Every O-line coach has their own way of teaching and things that they hold true, that they have been successful wherever they went. And so going from Russ Grimm, who Hall of Fame hog for the Washington Redskins, now Washington Commanders, was invaluable as a rookie coming from Northwestern. I learned so much football and those 2 years that he was there with me in Pittsburgh. I obviously learned from Alan Faneca and Marvell Smith, but having Russ Grimm in my ear, showing us clips of how they did it when he was in Washington, blocking for John Riggins and the rest of that the Hog O-line in Washington. It was amazing, and I learned so much. And then Coach Zuerlein came in and taught me some other things. He used to coach Alan Faneca at LSU, and so he gave me some tidbits on how to be better in space, because that was Alan Faneca's greatest asset, in my opinion. He could pull like nobody's business, but when it comes to space, the biggest thing, the biggest issue for big guys is trying to get a body on little guys, and Alan Faneca did that better than anybody. So I learned a great deal from Larry Zuerlein. And then Coach Cougs obviously came in, and we went to the Super Bowl with him. He was just an O-lineman's guy, former O-lineman himself, UTEP guy. He was one of us, and he taught us that it doesn't have to be cookie cutter. It doesn't have to look the same. Every body type does something different. Let me meet you where you're at. And so he did a great job of communicating with us. We had some great times going over to his house, hanging out. So every O-lineman coach that I had their own way of teaching, their own positives, their own negatives. And I learned so much from all three of them.
Did things hit differently when Grimm sent things to you guys? Because, you know, when you look back at the things that he did, as you mentioned, he's a Super Bowl champion with the Hogs, with Washington and all of that. Because of his career, did he command a different level of respect because of the things that he was able to accomplish during the course of his career?
Absolutely. I mean, when you've been there and done it at the highest level possible, and at the time we knew he was going to go to the Hall of Fame, his words are golden. And he didn't say very many of them. He didn't waste words at all. So you had to hang on to every one because you knew he was trying to get you to the right place every single time. He didn't need to fill your head with all these things to think about. He wanted you to get the job done, and he told you how to do it. And that's all there was to it. He kept it simple. And obviously his words meant a lot to us, and they still ring true to this day.
If the O-line does start to gel better and play better as the season goes on, do the Steelers have an actual RB1 that can go out there? Is Jaylen Warren that guy?
He is the one person I'm most excited about in this offense. He, on Saturday or Sunday, was by far the best, the brightest spot. I mean, A-Rod looked good too. Don't get me wrong. Seeing him move out there and throw some of those throws were fantastic. But every time Jaylen gets the ball, he looked like he did 2 years ago when we thought every time he touched it, something special could, and most times did happen. And that happened again on Sunday. And I think Coach Tomlin alluded to that when he was asked in the press conference, can Jaylen handle a bigger load? And he's like, absolutely. We need to get the ball in his hands, number 30's hands. And I think he definitely could be an RB1. I think he proved that to himself actually this Sunday. I know coming into the season, Gainwell started the game and he got at least half the carries. And so I think Jaylen took that to heart, came out with a game plan on Sunday that he executed to perfection, not to perfection, but effectively. And he did well. And I'm looking forward to see what he does against New England, because I think there's a lot in 30 he wants to prove this year, especially with Najee being gone.
What about on the opposite side of the ball on the D-line? Are you able to see what opposing offensive lines are doing to move these guys out of the way so easily?
They're getting double teams on our D-linemen. Like, Cam and Yaya Black and Logan Lee and Loudermilk, those guys, and Keanu Benton, they're running right off the center and left guard, away from TJ Watt. They're putting two tight ends on his side so he can't cut off on the backside like he's made so many great plays before. And they're just running down our throat. And it's mainly because so you want your D linemen to be able to hold the line of scrimmage, but you also want your linebackers to be able to feel quick, fast, and in a hurry and be physical and not try to take one side of a blocker or another when they're going up, getting up to the second level. And we don't have the linebackers for that yet. Our linebackers are quick, shifty guys that don't take blocks head on. And that's just not been the tradition of Pittsburgh Steelers to this point. Last year, we had a Landon Roberts who was not afraid to put his head in the fan. We had Robert Spillane years before that. And go down the list. We have guys who are not willing to put their heads in the fan when it comes to the run game. And right now, Patrick Queen, Peyton Wilson, they're just not physical enough at the point of attack. And I think it's getting exploited big time up the middle.
The deep crossing pattern is something that has consistently worked against the Steelers' secondary. Wide receivers are running free across the middle on the deep crossing patterns. And I expect that the Steelers' defense is going to continue to get a heavy dose of that. Plus the inside runs, like you were talking about, inside off the left B and C gaps, until they show that they can consistently stop those plays. So I guess my question is, are the coaches and the players, are they good enough? Are the schemes good enough to make the necessary adjustments? Because, Trey, I don't often notice a lot of in-game adjustments or adjustments from one game to the next by this coaching staff to help put these guys in better positions.
It's the scheme that I'm worried about. I think we have more than enough talent at every level. If we're going to deploy Patrick Queen and Peyton Wilson, then we probably need a more penetrating defensive line as opposed to two gaps that we've been doing for so long. And it's been a hybrid of sort. We have some defensive fronts and some defensive alignments where we are coming up the ball trying to disrupt and get penetration. But a lot of times I see us still two gapping, and that just does not work for the type of linebackers that we have. And then our secondary, full of vets. I'm not as worried about our secondary now. 2 weeks in a row, we got beat on that cross route. I think it's been broken down pretty good here. And it was talked about with Terrell Austin in the presser yesterday, where he said he got beat again and then in practice. Now, that's something that has to be rectified quickly, because every team is going to do that. And it's resulting in a touchdown and a big play every single time. And so I know teams are chomping at the bit to get to that play and get to that formation, whether we can stop it or not, because it's on film, it's obvious, and it's the same formation. Now, whether you motion into it or not, that's another thing. But the look should be familiar at this point for the secondary to get a hold on that. And I have faith that that will, because these are high-level veteran guys that have seen it and have been. I mean, you talk about Slay, you talk about Thornhill, you talk about Ramsey. They've all been to the Super Bowl. So they know what it looks like. They've played at the highest possible position that you could play in the biggest games ever. And so I think they will adjust. I hope they adjust, but it's definitely worrying to see on film 2 weeks in a row.
Trey, when the offense has it deep in the red zone, what I've been waiting to see, we got a little glimpse of it, but you got a 6'8", 280-pound tight end, Mount Washington. Is there a reason why you don't throw it up to that guy every time? Seems like he should be a touchdown-scoring machine inside the 10.
Chris, I've been making that bet every week on FanDuel. We're just waiting for Washington to go ahead and get him a touchdown. He got his two-point conversion, but it seems obvious that he should be targeted at least, I say twice, two or three times a game whenever we get down there. Now we got to get down there, of course.
Yeah.
And we haven't had that happen too many times. But between Darnell Washington and DK Metcalf, and then we got Jonnu Smith and Pat Fryer, we have a plethora of choices of guys to go to in the red zone, the biggest of them all being Mount Washington himself. And so we definitely got to use him. We definitely got to use the tight ends and in general more. Then Jonnu is only catching like screen passes and out routes. That's not how we used him in the preseason and in training camp when he was healthy. And so, and that's not how Miami got the most out of him. And so we got to get him more down the seam and on crossing routes and get more chunk plays out of Jonnu Smith, but definitely got to get Washington more involved in the red zone. That's a no-brainer.
Mike Tomlin is always credited with being such a great players coach. There are a lot of players that say they want to come play for him. Did you enjoy playing for him? Is he a guy that you wanted to run through the wall for?
Yeah. It was rough at first. I mean, when you're coming from a legendary coach like Bill Cowher who drafted you, you are loyal to that, especially in a place like Pittsburgh. Coach Tomlin had to come in and he had to ruffle some feathers, and it didn't vibe well with, I don't think, a lot of folks initially, but eventually the truest measure of a man is consistency. And that's one thing Coach Tomlin is if not, he is consistent. And so when you know what you're working with on a day-to-day basis, and he does care about who you are as a human being and not just a football player, it does make playing for him a lot more enjoyable. And so even in retirement, all the guys come back and he welcomes you back with open arms, like you never left. And so not only playing with him was great, but just having that steady relationship over time has been wonderful.
All right, so this is a golf show, so I need to sneak in a few golf questions.
I'm about to say, I thought it was a golf show, Chris, but yeah, you got into this football thing. It's kind of hard not to get into when you're talking about the Steelers. You get pretty emotional. So
indeed. All right, so you posted a picture of Chicopee Woods Golf Club earlier this month. Said that was going to be your office for the day. Now it's down here in Georgia, over in Gainesville. Talk about that golf course and the day that you have out there.
Dude, it was amazing. And so we moved down to Atlanta, Georgia from Indianapolis in 2021. And so the one task that I gave my wife when she was looking for homes was, you know, got to get the bedrooms, got to get the bathrooms. Just make sure I'm within 15 minutes of a golf course. And of course, I'm not. I'm in Grayson, Georgia, where the nicest golf courses are about 30 to 45 minutes away. Chicopee was 50 to 55 minutes away from where I'm living. And it was amazing, dude. They have three nines. Greens were pristine. I mean, if you saw the picture, you saw the views. That's how almost every hole looks. I was really impressed. And what makes it even better? It only costs $55 for green peas out there.
Get out.
Yeah, the green peas were amazing. And so he says that's why they're always packed. They always get a lot of action. But I was able to get in there in the morning, so it wasn't too packed when I went. The experience was amazing. But that's my thing now. Now that I'm retired, golf, I try to get out once a week if I can and try to enjoy this Georgia scenery down here. You got some beautiful golf courses down this way.
Indeed. So when did you first start playing?
Well, I played like the scrambles when I was playing, like when we do like the team scrambles, when I was still playing like 2011, 2012, it's probably when I bought my first, actually, I think my first golf set was given to me from like Nike or something. Back when we had our endorsement deals, we used to get an allotment of cash. Back when Nike was still making golf stuff, I bought some clubs then. Didn't take it seriously. Went to these nice courses. Didn't even know what I was doing out there. I say about maybe 6 years after retirement is when I really started picking it up. So this is 2025. I'm about 8 or 9 years in. My wife, I take that back. My wife's gonna kill me. My wife bought me my first set of golf clubs, and then I bought some Nike ones. Used my wife's ones first, and then Nike, I improved a little bit, and then really started getting serious into the game about 8 years ago, and I love every bit of it. And I hate it too, all at the same time.
So are you self-taught?
I am. I'm kind of stubborn that way. I will watch somebody and I would take some clues on YouTube. I'll watch the pros, which is probably the worst thing I could do, but I've etched out a pretty decent game just from watching folks. I have an awkward swing, not quite Charles Barkley-ish. I don't have a pause or a hitch or anything, but it is kind of wide and quick, and I've learned how to slow it down. Now, I'm more of an irons player. I could do without my driver if I don't have to hit it. But yeah, man, this game is something else.
Yeah, well, I say it all the time. It takes about 10 years just to go from awful to bad at golf.
No, I agree with you. I'm still in the awful phase. So I got some more years before I get to bad.
Do you have a favorite golf memory or experience, places you've played, things that you've done?
Yeah, I played some pretty cool places. So I got to play Butler National in Chicago. One thing I did not know when I was in Northwestern, because I didn't play golf, I didn't realize how many great courses are in the Chicagoland area.
Yes.
And so you have Butler National, got a chance to play Medina, had a chance to play Olympia Fields. I had a chance to play Conway Farms. I'm actually going to play Conway Farms at the beginning of October. Had a chance to play that with Michael Greenberg, another Northwestern alum. And so those are probably my favorite, like fancy courses, that name brand courses. But I'll tell you my favorite course, and a lot of people don't know about it. It's in Fort Wayne, Indiana, my hometown. It's a Jack Nicklaus course by the name of Sycamore Hills Golf Club or Country Club. I'm not sure if it's a country club or a golf club, but it's private and it's absolutely stunning, Chris, when I tell you. I'm going to have to take you up there one day.
Yes, please do. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. What about up in the Pittsburgh area? Did you get an opportunity to go play any of the courses up in and around the city?
Yeah. Didn't get to play the Oakmont. I didn't know Oakmont was a Pittsburgh course until I left Pittsburgh, which was crazy. But I got a chance to play Diamond Run, Treesdale, Neville Wood, Quicksilver, Grandview. These names are just coming to me. I'm surprised I'm remembering them. Did I say Neville Wood already?
You did.
I did say Neville Wood. Okay. Those are the five that jump out at me. But yeah, there's a lot of undulation in Pittsburgh. A lot of hills. Not too many flat lies. It's frustrating golf, but it's fun. It's beautiful.
Do you and the boys get together and do an annual golf outing?
That's on the docket. I have plans to get everybody. Everybody has like their own outing, so everybody's so busy. So it's hard to get a golf trip on the books. But I started something called the Essex Open this year. We went to Charlotte. This is actually for my family members. I got some my older family members from Fort Wayne and some friends of mine. We got together in Charlotte this year and played some of the public courses down there, which is another diamond in the rough as far as public golf is concerned. Probably the best public golf I've ever been to is in Charlotte, North Carolina. And they have all courses in like within this 35 mile radius. But yeah, trying to get the guys together for another golf trip somewhere fancy, maybe Vegas, maybe Phoenix, but definitely in the works.
Yeah, so where are some of the courses that are, you know, in your mind as a bucket list trip that you'd really love to go to?
I have not done Pebble Beach. That's definitely on there. And all those Torrey Pines, Country Club of LA. I did do Sherwood, which was awesome too.
Is that right?
I met Wayne Gretzky there. I was absolutely starstruck. A buddy of ours, Alex Holmes, former USC Trojans, had to hook up and hooked us up, and we had a good time out there. So definitely Pebble Beach, Torrey Pines. Probably will never get on Augusta, but I can dream, right?
And we all do.
And a place that I really want to go to, hopefully I can get there for my birthday, is Stream Song in Tampa. Are you familiar?
I have. Yes, very much so.
Stream Song looks amazing.
Yes, it is.
About it. You've played it?
I have. You should definitely go.
And also place in Michigan called Arcadia Bluffs. Those are the two places that I want to go to here in the next 2 years, if I can make it.
All right. So I got to go back to Sherwood. You got to tell me, what was Sherwood like?
It was awesome. They had like all these mansions that would be lining the back of greens and nothing else. It'd be like one mansion and then mountains and then the golf course. And everything, every blade of grass was in place. The greens were like a 20 on the stem. And I think I shot like 136 or something crazy. This was before I truly respected a game of golf. I was just going out there like, oh, this is fancy. I play it a little bit. I was just messing around. But no, if I went out there again, I would definitely take it a lot more seriously. But the place is absolutely immaculate. And oddly enough, nobody was there. I feel like places like that, like where they're super rich and fancy, those places don't probably get a lot of action because those guys are probably doing and busy doing other stuff. But when I went there, it was in the middle of the week. And nobody was there. We had the entire course to ourselves. We just made it that much better.
No doubt. Trey, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're out there doing? Listen to your show, you and Charlie, plus also follow you online and on social media.
Yeah, please, please follow me and my quarterback, Mr. Batch, on the Snap Count every Monday at 7 p.m. You also follow me at TreyDay79 on Twitter and Charlie Batch, CharlieBatch16 on Twitter as well. Also catch us on YouTube at Big Play Pittsburgh. That's where the Snap Count show is under, as well as follow us on Instagram under Big Play Pittsburgh as well. You can catch us on TV on Sportsnet's Pittsburgh as well. We are airing every Wednesday at 11 p.m.
Trey, it's always a lot of fun having you as part of the show. Now that I know that I can talk to you about the Steelers and golf, it just doesn't get any better.
I know, man.
I hope we get this privilege with you again soon.
Best of both worlds. Let's get out on the course one of these days, Chris.
Indeed. Let's do it.
All right,
take care, Trey. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
I appreciate it. You too.
See you, Trey.
See ya.
That is a great Trey Essex, folks. Two-time Super Bowl champion. Again, follow him on Twitter at TreyDay79. Listen to he and Charlie Batch on the Snap Count on the Big Play Network, bigplay.com. And Trey is a great guy and so insightful. He's not only a great follow day-to-day, but also in-game. While the Steelers are playing, there's nobody better to follow than Trey. He's going to tell you what's going on and share his frustration or his joy. Unfortunately, lately, it's been a lot of frustration for all of us in Steeler Nation. And if you're, like I say, a Steeler fan, you just want to better understand what's going on, or you're just a straight-up football fan and you want to understand better what's going on and what's happening in the trenches, you got to be sure to follow Trey. Go check out his show again as well. He's a fantastic guy. A lot of golf, which I didn't really know about until just recently, so I'll try to get him back on the show a little bit later on in the season. All right, my friends, thank you so much for checking out this bonus edition of Next on the Tee. I'll try to keep these bonus editions coming your way, particularly now that we're into football season. Maybe we can get more people like Trey Essex that play both sports, right? Played in the NFL, played college football, and also are out there playing great golf. So I'll try to keep mixing these in for you. I thank you so much for pressing play on this edition, and as always, for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on Trib Live or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.